Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
All right, how you doing, guys? It's Casey Ryan here again for the third and final installment of the Cutting Room Floor this week, and you guys kept me really busy. What can I tell you? And I'm happy to do it. My guest today is an author and a publishing expert, Lorca Damon. But before I get to her, I want to give a quick couple of shout-outs to a couple of friends of mine who are, you know, fighting the good fight in the indie community and other areas, and they asked me to make mention of their work, and I'm more than happy to do it. I should add as an aside, if you've got a story to tell or a project to sell, or if you've got a Kickstarter or an Indiegogo campaign that you want to plug, let me know about it. I mean, that's what this is all about, is sharing information and getting your word out there and helping raise funds and all that kind of other fun stuff. So the easiest way to get a hold of me, if you're on Twitter, because like I'm a total junkie for Twitter, you can get a hold of me at CuttingRoomMRB is my Twitter handle, or you can shoot me an email, cuttingroomfloor.mrb@gmail.com. I encourage all kinds of feedback, good, bad, and ugly, and I have had all of it. Or you can just look me up on Facebook and send me a friend request. You know, just look for my name, and the picture's the same, Casey Ryan, and the picture's the same as the one that I use on Twitter. So to that end, we're going to plug two projects today. Aaron Lehman, who was on this show on Friday night, again, I mentioned the fact that this guy was one of the best sports that I've had on because, quite frankly, he was in England, and I woke him up at 3 o'clock in the morning for an interview. But I don't normally get the kind of feedback that I get, or that I got, I should say, after I've had Aaron on. And Aaron is a performance artist, a visual artist. He's done all kinds of things, but this guy's on a different wavelength and sort of on a different level than some of the people that I'm used to having on here, and just sort of in a different category entirely. And he's gotten a lot of attention. I've gotten a lot of glowing feedback about his website and the work that he's done. So thank you for that. Thank you for supporting Aaron and his projects. He's got some new photography work that he wants you to take a look at, and you can find that at aaronlehman.com. So it's AaronLehman.com. So please go and take a look at Aaron's work. I'm also going to plug a local project. Mike Ryan, who is not a relative of mine, even though he lives in the same city, we've gone to the same schools, we're, you know, in the same kinds of things in terms of films and stuff like that. I have never met this guy face to face, but you know, it's sort of a weird little thing that just sort of happens, I guess, when the world is small but big at the same time. He's running a festival called Young Cuts. So the Young Cuts Film Festival is tailored towards young filmmakers, directors, and cinematographers. It's based out of Montreal, so I'm happy to promote a local project. This is happening next weekend, and if the stars align, then I have a couple of hours. Maybe I'll try to even get down there myself for this. It's running from Friday to Sunday of next week in downtown Montreal, and you can find more details about this at youngcuts.com. So again, we're always, you know, happy to encourage young people. We've had a lot of film students on this show that are coming on here and talking about their own influences. So youngcuts.com, go to the Young Cuts Film Festival. And again, you know, if I'm lucky, maybe you'll even see me there myself. My lineup for next month, this is another thing I want to mention very quickly. We're going into October. October is Massacre Month, where I sort of give a shout-out and a tip of the hat to the indie horror community. It was the first genre to embrace my show and give me a shot with setting me up on some cool interviews. So I've got 9 shows set up for next month. I've got a couple of bonuses thrown in there that aren't necessarily horror-related. But this, you know, as is tradition, when I do the last show of the month, I read off the lineup for next month. So here we go. So we're starting off next Saturday at noon. I've got, on October 1st, no less, I've got Jared Levy. And then I've got Andretti Dante is coming back. Ron Purdy is coming back. Mode Michaud is coming back. I've got Amber Scott, who is working on an anthology of short, scary stories. I'm going to do a special that's going to be coming live from the Flyway Film Festival in Wisconsin. And Rick Vasius is probably going to be there, and he's told me that he's going to try to bring some surprises with him by way of guests, so we're going to see what happens there. I've got and then I'm doing 2 shows on my birthday. You guys are making me work hard, okay? I've got GGM Green and Aether Productions, Gentry Chansey. I've got Real Life Ghost Hunters on my show on my birthday, you know, October 23rd. And then we've got T. Reed, who's going to be closing out the month, and he's going to be the headliner for Massacre Month, and he's going to be on October 30th making his second appearance. And it's always fun to talk to T. Reed. If you're not following him on Twitter, then, you know, look him up and follow him, because he's a really cool guy. So as you can see, I've got nothing to do. Again, thanks to all of the people who volunteer their time every weekend, you know, and we're going to tell the best stories that we possibly can. onward and upward, as they say. So my guest today is Lorca Damon. Now, I thought I'd tell a little funny story. I'm going to try to do this as much as possible. The first interaction that I had with Lorca on Twitter, because, like I said, the vast majority of my interviews come from Twitter anyway, but the first interaction I had with Lorca was I sort of throw something out there, and you never know what's going to come back at you once in a while, but one of the things that I started when I was up later than I usually should be was just to have this conversation with people about what they thought would be awesome in movies. And I just asked for the most obscure suggestions, and I just decided I was going to retweet anything that I got. Lorca's response was that she would like to see a remake of To Kill a Mockingbird where they didn't bugger up the Southern accents. That kind of brashness, quite frankly, is the kind of thing that's encouraged on the cutting room floor. So, you know, we got to talking. You know, she's got some really good work behind her. She's a teacher. She's a writer. She's a triathlete. She's working on her third novel. She's also a staffer for GoodyReader.com. So she's here today to talk to us about her own writing and also some practices and trends in publishing and digital media and all kinds of other fun things like that. So without further ado, the cutting room floor welcomes Lorca Damon. Lorca, how you doing?
Doing great. How are you doing?
Good, good. So the first question that I always have for everybody is, did I get all of that bio information right, or is that close enough for rock and roll kind of thing?
It is certainly more than close enough. I don't know. I think it makes me sound a little better than I might be at this.
So, I mean, what can you tell us, you know, to get started, you know, about your own writing? I mean, I know you got a blog going that I've really enjoyed reading over the course of the last week, and what can you tell us about your own novels?
Well, my own writing it's just been years in the making. Just, you know, everybody has those unloved books hidden in a drawer somewhere. I've heard rumor that Stephen King even has a first novel that nobody wanted to look at, and to this day, nobody wants to look at. I'm finding that one hard to believe still, if he has something that nobody's willing to publish, because I'd publish his grocery list. But as far as my own writing, I just enjoy to get some work out. I do have a published book, but it's amazing. It's not fiction. It's not funny. It's a kind of a how-to guide about my daughter with autism. And so I wrote that really to experiment with digital publishing. I had I thought it would be a good topic. It would be something I'm not invested in as my life's work, as a fiction work. But I wanted to really try out what all this trend was talking about. I covered digital publishing for GoodyReader.com. I kind of felt like a liar, you know, interviewing all these companies and CEOs and authors about their experience, and I had never done anything in that world. So I put up my e-book and I've just watched the whole process from both sides of it now, from as a reader and as an author.
So, I mean, what can you tell us about the process then? I mean, for somebody that never has done this before, we get a lot of people that are saying, you know what, I got a really cool idea for a book, but nobody's really willing to talk to me. You know, going the indie route is certainly an option, right, if you're willing to invest the time and the energy and the love into it. But maybe if you could sort of, you know, as being a bit of a subject matter yourself, but also having gone on this journey, what can you tell us about it? What was it like?
Well, I started the traditional route, too. I have two manuscripts right now with agents, and, of course, I'm still sitting there, like all the other writers, playing the waiting game. I have found that it's quite the nerve-wracking industry to try to go the traditional publishing route. At the same time, indie publishing is just as nerve-wracking for authors who intend to do it correctly. When we started the Indie Author Initiative at Goody Reader back in April, I put out message boards and Twitter announcements telling authors, hey, we want to profile you. We want to talk about you and your work, talk about you on our column, talk about you on the radio show. And I got all these floods of responses from indie authors. I was, this is great. All of them were saying things like, I've written a teenage paranormal romance, and I couldn't find an agent, so I self-published. And they would even include excerpts of the book. And it's something horrible, a very dark time in my writing career happened right then, because I found myself replying to people saying, I really appreciate you sending me your copy of your book. I'm sorry, your book does not meet our needs at this time. And I felt horrible. I'm that person. I'm that gatekeeper that indie authors were trying to avoid in the first place. And it was because I kept seeing the same thing over and over and over. So I started to get a real view of what it's like on both sides of traditional publishing and indie publishing. Because, you know, indie authors, you still have to have a fan base, you have to have a marketable concept for your book, and it's not quite as easy as a lot of people have just made it sound. Oh, I'm just going to self-publish it. Now that there's Kindle Direct Publishing, and there's Pubit, and there's Smashwords. There's all these options for indie authors. It's still not that simple. You still have to invest in your work, both financially and with your time and with your talent.
Okay, then, I mean, I realize this is kind of subjective, right? But, I mean, because, you know, we've all been on the receiving end of this where you've submitted writing and, you know, and they come back and tell you know what, this is good, but it's not what we want, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to you, what is the vision of what some of these publishing companies are looking for? I mean, you know, how do you get their attention? I realize it's kind of an overly simple question, but what to you are some of the earmarks that you look for that would really get your attention?
One of the things that I have found that happens in publishing, and this is probably more readily seen by the average consumer in the movie industry, is like where two different production studios will produce almost an identical concept. So
right.
We had Dante's Peak and the Volcano movie. We had Deep Impact and Armageddon. We had The Reef and Finding Nemo, Shark Tale. So they look at what consumers are interested in, and that's what we're going to invest in right now. Doesn't matter if it's good or bad. This is what we're going to try out. And in profiling these indie authors, I had several who told me they got personal phone calls from publishers and from agents even just based on their query where they said, I love the way you write, but I can't sell another vampire story. What else you got?
Right.
And the authors left saying, I don't have anything else. I spent 2 years writing this book. Only to have the person come back and say, oh, well, you know, when you got something else, give me a call. I like the way you write. You're a good writer, but I can't market your topic right now. At the same time, this is especially true of the bloggers, people who have a very popular blog with good subscriber numbers. There have been bloggers who've been told, you know, you've got quite a fan following. When you get 3,000 more subscribers, call me.
Okay, well, I mean, when you say, because I know a lot of people that are just sort of tapping into the blogging thing right now.
Uh-huh.
I mean, how do you monetize that when you say, you know, when you've got 3,000 more subscribers? I mean, are you talking about people that are actually trying to market a published book, but they also have a blog on the side, or are you talking about, you know, a blog exclusively that people can take the entries and sort of twist into a book kind of thing?
Both scenarios, exactly what you just described, where you've got a person who has written a book who happens to maintain a blog to get the word out and to keep a fan following, and then other people whose only career ambition was to write a blog. I know right now theblogist.com is a very widely known, award-winning blogger. Her work is being turned into a book. So she had not originally sat down to write a book. She was just a very funny blogger and writes a column for the Houston Chronicle newspaper, things like that. And that's where agents contacted her and said, you know, let's work this into a sellable book for your readers. And then you've got the opposite, the first thing you described, which is someone who writes a book, and while they're playing the waiting game of deciding what to do with it, how to publish it, they maintain their blog and have quite a following that way. Well, that also picks up the attention of agents and publishers where they're saying, okay, I noticed you got quite a very popular blog here. When it reaches this number, call me, and we'll try to push this and try to go further with it. And so it can be very frustrating to say, well, it's all based on numbers. If I've written a good book, it's a good book. What's holding me back? Well, they also need to be able to show that fan following and that marketability of the topic.
Here's a question that I got from the chat room. How often should somebody typically post a blog? I mean, is this sort of a daily occurrence, or would you recommend, you know, 2 or 3 times a week or once a week, or does it depend? What to you is sort of the sweet spot for frequency of blog posts?
I think that's going to really depend on the type of blog you're running. If you're doing maybe a recipe blog or a cooking blog because you like to write cookbooks, you're going to need lots of content. You can't post one award-winning recipe and say, okay, I'm good for the week. You know, so depending on what your readership likes to look at the same time, if you write a humor blog, you don't want to put bad material up there. You want to be able to have the time to put into it. I think more important, though, is to make it consistent. So whether it's once a week, 3 times a week, whatever it is, you need your fan followers to be able to know this is the day I expect to have more content up there. If for something's coming up, say, you know, hey, my book was picked up by an agent and we want to work on some editing right now, you're going to have some content to fill in there, something to let people know you didn't just quit, you didn't just go on vacation and stop writing. You need to have something posted that they can see, okay, this is the date I'll find some more new material. So rather than just the number of posts you need, I think the established consistency is what your fans need.
So, I mean, you know, this would be kind of cool. So, in the sense that, you know, that every Tuesday that, you know, your favorite blogger is going to have something up and you can go and find it.
Exactly. And a lot of bloggers are actually getting themes where it goes with, on Mondays I post this, on Wednesdays I post that, you know. And so especially for the more widespread blogs, the more general topic blogs, one thing that I see a lot of indie authors messing up with is, and they do this with Twitter, Facebook, blogging, whatever, is the mixing up of their worlds. If your name on Twitter is Author Michael, you don't post pictures of your vacation with your son. You can have an account that says, you know, a family man, and then there's your vacation pictures. If it somehow pertains to you being an author, that's great. You write about families and you write about vacations. Go ahead and put that picture up there under that account. But you can't tell people, this is my blog, you know, michaelwrites.blogspot.com, whatever it is, and then have it be about something random and unrelated to what you write about. We also see a lot of authors making a mistake of crossing genres with their writing. So even indie authors are doing this where, you know, if your title is TiffanyYA.com, you don't post erotica on your blog. So you're more than welcome to be a successful erotica writer. You need to have a separate account for that because you want anybody, fans, agents, whomever you're trying to reach with your material and your online presence, you need them to be able to find that. And that's what you want them to look for.
But, I mean, even though it's the same person, do you find that there's a lot of, you know, personality clashes or inconsistencies? I mean, is that really a serious problem for a lot of people?
I think the bigger one is not so much the personality clash. I see that occasionally. What I often see are people who establish an account or an online presence or a blog hoping it's their professional life, and then they start throwing their personal life in it.
Yeah.
So if you're a comedy blog writer, I don't want to read about your meltdown with bipolar disorder on your blog. That's not funny. Now, if you're writing a blog post about finding the humor in that, okay, you know, that shows me that you're an even funnier person, because if I see you're a human being with serious problems but you can still laugh at it, okay, you know, that's great, but don't write about the deep pit of depression you're in on this blog. By all means, open up another blog account and write about the hell you're going through, but that's not your comedy blog or your YA or your children's literature. I'm not buying a children's picture book if all I read about on your blog is the pit of despair that is bipolar disorder. You know?
Yeah.
You're not writing the children's book I buy for my son. So just make sure that you keep your lives separate on your accounts. And like I said, there's ways to make them smudge together and blend as long as it's still pertinent to what you write. But you don't want them to completely bleed over.
As a rookie, you know, what are some of the things that people can do to make their blog more visually appealing? And I know that this is also something that, you know, where the writing would be, you know, really, really good and attractive to look at, but the rest of it is just visually atrocious. You know, what are some of the simple things that people can do to get attention for themselves in that regard?
I will tell you one of my very first rookie mistakes. I opened up my blog, LorcaDamon.com. It's a fun little humor blog. It's completely bizarre crap that flies into my head, and that's what I like to write about. My first theme, it was called Koi Pond on WordPress. So you see this very Asian-looking backdrop with the koi fish and the swirls of calligraphy, and it's about me killing my husband and throwing him in a pit. And so those don't go together. You're lured in by this very relaxing, meditative scene of your Zen insight, and instead it's ways to hide the body, you know. And it's good to have that unexpected twist at the end, but that's not unexpected. That's just knocking the legs out from under them. The time of year I happened to start that account was in the winter, and you could click this little box and make it snow on your blog until January. I thought, oh, that's cool. Look at that snow falling all over the blog. That's cool. Older readers were telling me, please get that stuff off there. I can't see. I can't see the words. All I see is white stuff. So in that regard, it didn't match what I was writing about. If I wanted to write about, you know, how I have found inner peace and overcome through the trials of motherhood, that's a blog to have a relaxing theme. At the same time, and, you know, make it match what you write about. I mean, don't have this black page with dark red gothic letters. If you write children's literature, that's not the right blog theme. Don't have Snoopy dancing in the corner if you write horror fiction. Make sure that even the visuals of your blog or even your avatar on Twitter or the font you choose to use on something, make sure it lines up with what it is that you're trying to put in front of your fans. Ultimately, if you're going to be an indie author, every single thing you do on the internet is going to somehow relate back to your career, whether it's
in some respects, it's not necessarily about what you think looks cool, but it's about how other people would perceive it in a certain extent, right? But
exactly.
I mean, you may like the really dark gothic font, and you may think that it's funny in your own mind to do that while you're talking about, you know, the crazy antics of your kid writing on the walls or whatever, but, if it looks more along the lines of something out of Stephen King's nightmares, then it's probably not going to fly so good.
Exactly. Well, because what's going to happen is they're going to get to that page, look at the views, and go, oh, I'm at the wrong page, and exit
right.
out. So they're going to leave it, even without possibly giving it a chance. And then if they do stick around to read it and they don't line up, you've just created the perception in the person's mind that you have multiple personality disorder and that they're not embracing what you write. Instead, they're tolerating what you write, hoping that next time around it's still okay. You don't want to leave that perception in the minds of your fans.
So, I mean, what motivates you personally as a writer then? I've read some of the excerpts that you had on your blog there, and that is some seriously funny stuff, by the way.
Thank you.
But, I just got to call this out because this is an image that I'm not soon going to get out of my head. And I say this tongue-in-cheek because my wife doesn't like seafood all that much either. She says that she doesn't eat fish, quote, because it tastes like licking the bottom of a boat. So, cool.
It does to me. Actually, honestly, my humor blog is actually unrelated to a lot of my fiction writing. It is a place where anybody who stumbles across my name can find something I write about, whether it's for Good eReader or if it's, if I'm still trying to query an agent or if I just want someone to buy my ebook. My ebook, in fact, here's a great example, is not funny. It is very straightforward. I tell you in the introduction, I'm glad you bought this on an e-reader because you're not going to throw your Kindle when you get mad at me. So it's not humorous at all. There are parts to it where I'm laughing at life. And so the thing about my humor blog, that's my personal outlet to get out the funny stuff. You mentioned I'm a teacher. I teach in a prison. That's not funny. I'm laughing as I say that because to me it's wildly hilarious. I have some very unfunny situations at work. I talk about my kids a lot. It's not funny that my daughter has autism, but I laugh all the time at what happens. So my humor blog is really for me and for people to just get a sense of what amuses me. It's also, and this is true of all indie authors, it's just an excellent place to show people your range as a writer and what you could write about, especially if you don't want to be locked into a genre or a series. If you want people to love your work, but not say, well, I'm not buying this next book because it's not about the vampire again, it's about something else, you've just demonstrated to your readers, I could be funny, I could be sad, I could be serious, I could make you think. So your blog can demonstrate for people all the things that you could write about and not lock you into one type of writing. So that's really where my humor blog comes in. It's, I don't get to write about humor. When I'm writing about digital publishing for Good eReader, I don't get to be funny about it. I'm reporting what is now happening with Kobo and Amazon and Barnes & Noble. It's not funny. So I don't get to stick that in there. I get it out of my system, on my blog.
Okay, so I mean, to that extent, I know that you've done a lot of really good work with Good eReader, right? What can you tell us about your involvement with them, and how did that working relationship come about, and what kinds of other things do you cover in your capacity as a staffer over there?
Sure, I've actually gotten to give a couple presentations for writing groups about how I got this job with Good eReader, because ultimately we're all trying to make a career out of our writing. I always tell people it's almost like I set out to be a novelist and I ended up as a journalist. It's kind of like the girl who becomes a stripper to pay for medical school and never actually ends up becoming a doctor because I'm really enjoying my work covering digital publishing. I feel like I've sold out, but I'm really enjoying it, and it's a job and it's an income. And I've actually gotten to meet some fascinating writers and fascinating industry professionals and stuff, so I'm really enjoying what I do. But it started out by just offering this website some articles for their content, for their article feed, and because I happen to know a good bit about e-readers. I have a class set of Kindles that I use in my classroom at the prison because I don't have any textbooks. A lot of my students can't read. So I use the Kindles to get books and things that they need on their level. So I had actually contacted the editor of this website and offered him an article. And he loved it and said, great, I'm happy to put it up there. So he did. And over the next few months, a couple other topics came up. And then I wrote one about how my daughter with autism has benefited from using an e-reader. And so he published that one for me. So at the onset, it was all just great publishing credit, which is something that you cannot discount as an indie author, even if it's not for pay. My first few articles for this site were not for any kind of benefit or compensation. They were simply, when you Google my name, there it is.
Right.
Wow, this lady's published. Wow, look at this. So that's something to not discredit when you're out looking for places to get your work out and to get your name out, is even down to the free opportunities. That, like they say, you know, that's promotion. You can't pay for that. You can't buy that, you know, when people are seeing your name. So over time, I wrote several other articles for this site, and eventually the editor contacted me and said, you know, we're hiring two more staff writers to write website content for us. Are you interested in doing that? That actually, my major concern at the time was finding enough to write about. I thought it's one thing when I write about situations that I'm personally embedded in, like the teaching or my daughter. And so it was about a month of writing content for him on a trial basis and saying, I haven't committed to taking this position. Let me try this out and see if I have the time of the day and the knowledge to write about this. And from there, we really opened up the whole side of digital publishing for Good eReader. And like I said, profiling companies who publish ebooks or the platforms that distribute them, the indie authors themselves. And so it's just been really fantastic. It's also afforded me the opportunity to travel. I've gotten to go to Book Expo for Good eReader. I'm going to the self-publishing Book Expo next month. So I've gotten to go to a lot of these different events and meet more authors and more professionals and talk to these people. So I got to interview the president of Scholastic Book Clubs last week.
You did.
As a teacher, that was right. As a teacher, that was just thrilling, you know, that I got to finally talk to this person. They're launching an ebook initiative in this fall. So they'll be able to sell ebooks to families who have e-readers. The kids, you know, that crinkly piece of paper you used to get once a month from your teacher with books you could order.
Right. Yeah,
you'll
yeah.
now be able to order. Right. Everybody loves those. You'll be able to order ebooks. So anyway, so it's very exciting and to see how they're going to do that. So it's really opened up a whole world of interesting topic that pertains to me, of course, as a writer, as a teacher.
How do you think that attitudes towards indie, and I ask this question pretty much every time I have an indie author on, right, but I never get quite the same answer, which is kind of cool. How do you think that attitudes towards, you know, sort of the independent publishing type thing have changed over the last little while? I mean, initially it was kind of viewed in some circles as, you know, that people, you know, couldn't really get published a traditional route, would go the indie route. But do you think that that attitude has changed at all, or and if so, how?
I think it has gotten a lot more respectability. I think it started out headed down the wrong path where, like we talked about, anybody with a Word document can convert it and upload it to Kindle and Nook and other e-readers. And that right there had the potential to completely ruin it,
right,
to make it just an outlet for junk and for bad writing. And I've got to say, there is some bad writing out there.
Right.
There are a few writers who are publishing who could stand to take a few classes at the community college. And I don't say that to be ugly or to presume that I'm a better writer or anything like that. But when we flood these distribution channels with pirated books and spam and PLR and just bad unedited titles, it does kind of bring the whole industry down a notch. Fortunately, just in the nick of time, I feel like it got salvaged by so many authors, established authors, stepping up and saying, you know what, I'm done meeting deadlines. I'm done with, you know, traditional print publishing. Even the ones who are saying, well, I'm just going to play in both worlds right now. I'm going to keep a foot in traditional and one in indie. So it got some respectability. And the really bad analogy is like all of us poor indie writers were the little nerds whose football playing big brothers came along and kept us from being picked on. So it's the swimming in the world of the high school again, you know, to have that respectability you're looking for. You have to have something to back it up, though. And so fortunately, I think a lot more people in the traditional industry came along and said, you know, there's something to be said for this. This is working out. It is the wave of the future. And the person we can thank the most for that is the reading consumer.
Right.
They snatched up ebooks and ran with it. So I was attending these conferences and still hearing people saying, oh, it's a flash in the pan. It's never going to catch on. It's just the new thing. People will get tired of it. You know, I don't see that happening. I do finally see the acceptance that this is going to coexist side by side, print and digital, are both going to be accepted together because they both have such excellent purposes. I have a print edition of To Kill a Mockingbird, the movie you were talking about on Twitter, and it's autographed by the author. That, to me, is more valuable than my Kindle. I have a Kindle with 200 books in it. I will never let go of my
print. You actually
have
an autographed copy of To Kill a Mockingbird? Did I get that right?
I do.
Holy cow.
I do. And if I ever had the house fire, the Kindle is staying behind because I can replace it.
That's right. The thing.
So there's attitudes about both, print and about electronic, that they both serve a purpose. So I don't think either is really going away.
Another question I got from the chat room is, do you follow any blogs yourself?
I do. I follow the bloggers. It's a person I wrote about. She is startlingly hilarious. She is somebody I cannot even read at work because she's so funny. And then several other blogs of people that I didn't come across the blog first. I came across the blog writer first on Twitter. And so that's one thing that I cannot push enough to indie authors. You have got to get on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, whichever platform you feel comfortable in. I can't say there's one that's better than the other. I happen to prefer Twitter as far as where I devote my effort to an online presence and to making connections. That's just my preference, but whichever one you pick, you've got to stay on it. You cannot come back, you know, 2 or 3 weeks later and go, oh, I think I'll check my Facebook today. You've got to keep that online presence for the sake of the people that you want to read your work. So on Twitter, I've found lots of indie authors, and from seeing what they tweet and what they comment on, that's where I've decided to follow their blogs. So I kind of do that in reverse.
Apart from the bloggers, I mean, I've got my own favorites. I mean, I've had Rachel Thompson and Eden Bailey and Jason McIntyre and Luke Romain and, you know, Claude Bouchard and Lona Suzuki. I mean, these are all people that I've gotten to know on Twitter and that they're favorites of mine, right? But, you know, who are some of the favorite indie authors of yours that you've, you know, Twitter discoveries, so to speak, that you can tip people off to?
As far as the Twitter discoveries, a few of the ones that you've mentioned, that Rachel and Eden and Lorna, of course. I love Lorna only because people kept getting our names mixed up, and I would get all these awesome tweets about me. I'm like, oh, they meant Lorna. Oh, gosh, guys, it's Lorna Damon. And they thought they were tweeting to her or about her or how awesome she is. I was like, I'll take it, but I'm not Lorna.
Okay.
So she and I have had a good several laughs over that because I think at one point she actually got a criticism the person meant to aim at me, and they sent it to her instead. So I get all of her praise, and she takes all the heat from me. So I just love her to death. But, so I followed those. One I cannot mention enough, and as far as following his writing and his blog and his entire career, happens to be the first person I ever profiled for the Indie Author News on Goody Reader is Solomon Inkwell. He has somehow managed to create the exact perfect combination of crazy horror, young adult literature, paranormal, all of it without following the trends. I mean, I'm personally sick to death of vampires, but his is still, every time I find something on his blog or in his books, it's something new that has not been done yet. So Solomon Inkwell is one that I met on Twitter and follow him religiously so to see where he's going and what he's writing now.
Well, he's got quite a cult following, yeah? I mean, I haven't come into contact with him yet myself, but I've heard that name before many times. So.
Yes, he's actually, I know he just released Vicky Van Helsing, and that was actually the one I mentioned where the agent personally called him just based on the query letter in the sample chapter without even requesting the full, and called and was like, this is fantastic, but I can't spell it. What else you got? And when he told me that, I thought that was probably my actual culminating moment where I thought, this is a whole different industry now. This, because people, we always think of, this is my baby, this is my project, my life's work. It's really not. It's a business. You're a writer, it's your job. That's all it is. Now, to the writer and to the fans even, this isn't your amazing life's work. To the industry, including the digital publishing industry and the indie author industry, it is ultimately, at the end of the day, just a business.
Right.
So even if you're pushing your own books and you're doing amazingly well with your blog and Twitter and your own sales and you're happy with your page on Amazon and your number of ebooks sold, it is still a business. Amanda Hawking explained one day in an interview why she took the print book deal. She was doing amazingly well putting her own ebooks up on Amazon. She just signed over a good chunk of all of her money to write those 4 books for St. Martin's Press. And she said the reason she was willing to lose some of the money coming in was because she's tired of being a businesswoman. She said, I just want to write books. I don't want to go on, you know, I don't want to set up book signings myself and and have to, you know, get on Twitter again and tell the world, look, I've written another book. You know, she said, let somebody else do that for a while. I've done it. I just want to write the books.
Simply stated, what can I tell you? We're going to have to sort of wrap this up, but Lorca, I just wanted to thank you for, you know, all the help. You've been a big, you know, help in promoting my show, and, you know, certainly it was fun to talk to you on Good E-Reader there for a while at one point. I would strongly recommend that anybody take a quick look at LorcaDamon.com, and it's LorcaDamon.com for her humor blog. But Lorca, is there any other sites that you'd like to promote? Where can people go to learn more about your work, or you know about you in general, or Good E-Reader, or anything like that? Where can people go?
Well, like you said, you touched on Good E-Reader, and then there's a host of sites that will have their accounts through Twitter. So lots of sites, the Indie Author Network, Indie Book Collective, of course. There's, if you just look for it on Twitter, anything to do, just search Indie Author, Digital Publishing, anything, you're going to come up with tons of accounts, more people than you can follow in a day, of valuable information. There's even, it's interesting if you follow the hashtags, there are even agents who are willing to say to you, look, I know I don't represent your kind of book, I don't write, you know, I don't follow this kind of writing, but I can tell you this if you want to know it and where to find more. So even the agents are getting involved in helping writers become better indie authors, which I think is just amazingly cool. They're willing to say, I don't do this. I will never represent your book, but I want you to succeed for your fans. So even the hashtags, YA Lit Chat, Ask Agent, Kid Lit, all these hashtags, PubWrite, I cannot talk about them enough. PubWrite is a hashtag of just indie authors who just sit around writing about their day and what they're writing about and things like that, and their successes, failures, and so on. So make sure, get on Twitter and check out those hashtags.
And if you're downloading this, I should have prefaced this, and you know, if I know you're going to raffle off that list, I'm going to go back and listen to this interview again and write some of these names down, because these are very valuable resources. I've heard of some of these hashtags myself. I've had one person, at least from the Indie Book Collective, on. Amber Scott, by the way, is part of that Indie Book Collective, and she's going to be on later in October. So if you're interested in that and you didn't quite catch this, again, back the interview up, and very, very good, solid resources if you're in the indie community. So that's going to about do it for us today. Again, I've been talking with Lorca Damon about her own writing style and humor blogs and best practices in digital publishing. She's a staffer for Good E-Book Readers, which is a very valuable website. Go and take a look at that. And again, her own blog is found at www.lorcadamon.com. So Lorca, any thoughts, closing thoughts before we close this out?
Nothing except just to remind the people that if you can't write it and you can't read it, I can't find it. So make sure you get it up there. Make sure you get the word out about yourself. Drag that book out of the back drawer where you've hidden it and do something with it.
Wisely said. So that's going to do it for us this week. I'm going to be back. We're doing a Saturday show next week. I'm going to be on Saturday, October 1st at 12 p.m. Eastern Time with filmmaker Jared Levy. And, you know, that's going to be a really interesting discussion. So go and check out his websites, and I'll be promoting that very aggressively over the course of the next week. So until next Saturday, even listen to Casey Ryan and my guest Lorca Damon on the cutting room floor. Cut, print, wrap, and I am done.